It is not hard to destroy a college.
Last season, the podcast Campus Files brought you stories of fraternity drug rings, stolen body parts, campus cults, and more.
And now Campus Files is back for another season.
There's a guy screaming into his phone. He's like, I just saw Charlie Kirk get assassinated right in front of me.
Every week is a new episode and a new story.
It was so chaotic.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh boy, I'm still cracking up. So we listened back to it during the break. My initial assumption was correct. We'll play it for you coming up in just a bit, but we had Jerry Hairston Jr. on, who does a great job talking baseball, and we wanted to pop him up for 5 to 10 minutes, and he told me when I reached out to him earlier today that he was either going to be in the car or he's going to be at the gym. Right? He said he was going to be at one or the other, so he couldn't do it via Zoom, and he would just be on via the phone. So he said, yeah, no problem. We tried it now in the digital age that we're in, get everything on Zoom so we could have the video of it, which would have been effing awesome for this. But now it was just having the audio. And we're going through it, right? We're talking about the Rafael Devers trade. Going to be a quick interview with Otani coming back tonight. I told him we weren't going to keep him more than 8 to 10 minutes. And then my last question, since he did play for the Yankees, was about Aaron Judge. And I was just kind of making the point where, hey, Aaron Judge is now at a level where he's not Barry Bonds. But when he's up at the plate, I think to myself, should a team just walk him? As if a lot of times when you thought of Barry Bonds, even when the bases were loaded, teams did walk, intentionally walk Barry Bonds. And while Jerry Hairston Jr. was answering that question, he was at the gym, and I guess a lady had enough of hearing Jerry Hairston Jr. yap about baseball. This is how it sounded a few moments ago on the show.
For him to be a power guy and to still hit for high average, I'm not talking about hitting 300, 310. He's approaching. He's approaching.
Out.
Start.
You're good. No worries.
I'm in an exercise lady. This lady. She's yelling, screaming. She's sitting acting crazy. She has her headphones on. She shouldn't be able to hear me. So, but let me walk out.
Yeah,
walk out. So, all right.
No worries, no worries, Jerry. We're up against it anyway, so we got to let you run. There he is, Jerry Hairston Jr. Joining us on the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. That's amazing. So listening back to it, she starts screaming at him, you're too loud, too loud. And then I guess he thought that she couldn't hear him because she probably had her headphones on. Now, maybe she wasn't listening to anything. Maybe she just had her headphones in. Maybe she was awaiting a call.
Maybe they're not noise-canceling headphones.
Yes, that is true as well. And it's not as if Jerry Hairston is a loud human being. And he's just given the take there. I'm so annoyed that we were up against it with the hard out. Because I would have said, Jerry, put the microphone in her face and let's interview her. Oh, my God. And then at the end, when he's just trying to walk away and he goes, this lady's just yelling at me. She you hear her very faintly. Because I think, Stu, did you fade her down a bit?
I was worried that she was going to say something that she wasn't supposed to say.
Yeah, because I thought at first, I forgot he was at the gym. I thought at first it was just a kid or something running into the house, one of his kids or something like that. That's what I just assumed. And then you hear very faintly her say, you're so selfish. Amazing. Now, hold on. I'm getting a reaction from Jerry Hairston Jr. He said, sorry about that. That lady had a psychotic breakdown. I said, all good. We were cracking up. And I said, just for clarification, she was mad at you for talking on the phone, it sounded like. And he goes, just reported her to the manager. Guess she's had a few issues before. Now, we got to be fair here. We got to call spade a spade. If you're at the gym, is it fair game? You're at a public gym. Is it fair game to be on a phone call? Samter?
Absolutely. Now, I mean, you have to be respectful of the people around you, but of course you could be on a phone call. But here's the thing. If you are annoyed with someone being on a phone call, you walk up to them and you politely say, hey, listen, I'm trying to work out here. Your phone call is disrupting me. I'm sure Jerry would have been like, no problem. I'll walk away. You don't just go to the person aggressively yelling, screaming, and cursing at the guy. You just say, excuse me, sir, would you mind lowering or walking away while you're on your phone? That's all you got to do. And then he would have done it in a heartbeat.
Stu, what's your reaction on this?
I'm kind of with Samter. If I was at the gym, it would probably annoy me if someone was talking on their phone next to me loudly, or I guess somewhat loudly, for 10 minutes. But again, I wouldn't scream at them like that, for sure.
So I think the way Samter said it was perfect. Because at first, I go, you shouldn't probably be on your phone at the gym. It's just rude. Now, it's funny me saying that because we had the guy on the show talking to him at the gym. But I would think it's rude. But you are right, Mike. There's a way to approach people when there's a conflict. And if you hear someone just yapping, it's disturbing your workout, you could just walk up to them and say, hey, sir, no disrespect, I'm trying to work out. You're kind of impeding my workout with how loud you are. This is a public gym. There's a locker room, I'm assuming. Go to the locker room or step outside if you got to take a phone call. That's what I think the appropriate thing would do. Not just running up and yelling. Now, let's be real. I'm sure you've all been on a train when someone's on speakerphone or they're playing music and it's so insufferable. So it's a similar thing here. Now, I guess he was on headphones, he was saying anyway. But if you're in a public place and let's say the person next to you is maybe being a little bit noisy or you just don't want to hear their conversation, would you actually have the guts to walk up to that person while you're on the train there or working out next to them and say, hey, can you keep it the bleep down?
I do it all the time. On the train, not at the gym, because if you look at me, I don't work out.
Are you a Karen on the train?
No. I usually do it politely until the person becomes rude about it, right? So if someone's listening to music without headphones, or they're on their phone, or on speaker loudly, right? I'll say, excuse me, would you just mind putting on headphones or taking off speaker and just talking normally? And if they say, if they react positively, that's the end of it. If they react with attitude, how dare you tell me, or I'm on my phone, I can talk to whoever I want to, or that's when I give attitude. That's when I go full on, get the hell out of here. But, I initially start, nicely. And I think that's how you're supposed to do it. Just let the other person be a jerk.
Stu, you're working out, doing the elliptical, the treadmill, whatever, and someone's yapping away at a gym. And you're annoyed by it. Are you confronting that person?
Probably not. I also have headphones that are noise canceling, so usually that kind of stuff doesn't bother me as much.
What'd you say?
I have noise canceling. Oh, I see.
Stu wouldn't say anything in the moment to the person. He would just tweet about it.
That's also true.
A joke is if I had noise canceling headphones on. I don't think I would confront someone about that. I really wouldn't. I would think some horrible things. But I don't think I would actually get up from where I am and walk over and say, hey, sir, or hey, ma'am, you got to shut the bleep up. I don't think I would do that.
What would it take for you to do that? Not just talking on the phone. Like, what would someone have to do at the gym or on a train to piss off Zach Gelb to a point that you have to confront them?
If their conversation annoyed me. Not the actual tone of it.
But the Mets are actually really, they're going to win the World Series this year.
But if it's just this terrible conversation, a horrifying conversation, someone saying something stupid or someone saying something offensive, or if it's someone, I don't know, if it was a kid crying or something like that through the phone, I would be like, come on, what are we doing? Then I would.
Peyton Manning's a better quarterback than Tom Brady could ever dream to be.
Then the person, the guy on the phone then would be punched. All right, I'd be arrested for assault probably. That's assault, brother. All right, it is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. So Jerry Hairston Jr. We could post that, right? You don't think he's going to get offended if we post that, right? Online?
I don't think so. He wasn't in the wrong, I don't think.
No.
I think it'll be funny. I mean, this isn't, you can always ask him just to make sure, but I think that's fine.
Well, we'll ask for forgiveness later. That was awesome. I was so annoyed that we had a hard out there, though, because he was going to walk into another room to continue the conversation. Oh, boy. That was really something. That was great. Jerry Hairston Jr. on the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network getting accosted by a lady who's at the gym that was annoyed that Jerry Hairston Jr. was spewing hot takes when it came to baseball. Real quickly, so here's my 2 cents on the whole Rafael Devers trade. I remember the second go around at this because I thought the situation, you could still find a way to mend the fences after they brought in Alex Bregman and he had no interest in giving up his position of third base, Rafael Devers, and they ended up making him be the DH. And he was annoyed. But I didn't call him a baby or I didn't call him a bad teammate until Cassis got hurt at first base. And they said, hey, can you play first base? And he said no. And I guess Bregman also got hurt again recently. And he wasn't still playing at third base. They weren't like, all right, go back and get your position back, whatever. So it must have been so ugly behind the scenes. And I know the Red Sox ownership does not deserve the benefit of the doubt. It's why they won 4 World Series since 2004. But what's happened late with that organization, that fan base hates them. That fan base hates that ownership group. So when I look at this now, it's not the fact that they traded Devers, because eventually you got to control your own team, right? You're paying this guy $300+ million. If he doesn't want to be a team player, if he's upset about going to DH or upset about you asking him to go to first base, we're paying you, dude. Go pound sand. I understand we're now in an era of player empowerment, but geez Louise, you got to go do your job how we tell you to go do your job. So that's one thing. It's not the fact that they traded him. The timing of it is bizarre. When you just swept the Yankees, there's a little feel-good moment. All right, the Red Sox going into the season, there was some optimism. They didn't have this incredible start. They've been right around the 500 baseball team. You just swept the Yankees. The Yankees, team that was in the World Series last year. I know they lost to the Dodgers, but the AL pennant winners. Reigning AL pennant winners. And you just swept the Yankees, and you trade this guy as he was on his way to the airport, right? They're going out to Seattle. And he comes on back and he goes into the facility. I saw some video of him driving out in his nice car. So it's not that you traded him. It's just when you traded him and then also how little you got back in return. And I saw Buster Olney said it the other day. They didn't shop him around. And that's the first thing I thought of was Nico Harrison. I don't agree with trading Luka Doncic. I understand more trading Rafael Devers here. But if you're going to trade Luka Doncic, wouldn't you say, all right, start bidding. Let's get 4 or 5 teams involved so you could really jack up that price. And the fact that the Giants were the only team here, and let's be real, the return is not a lot. Kyle Harrison, Jordan Hicks, James Tibbs III, and Jose Bello, like that's the return? You could have got a lot more. So it's not the fact that they traded him. It's just when they elected to trade him and how little they ended up getting back in return. That's to me is the shocking part. That to me is the part where the Red Sox fan, where if you were to trade him and you got a haul, all right, this wasn't attainable. We brought in Bregman. The dude was being a pain in the ass. He was being a baby. He was being a jackass. He was being a petulant player. And we told him DH. He put up a big stink. We told him to go to first base. He put up a big stink. You got to trade him. You got to get something tangibly. I know it's prospects for the most part, but you got to get a crazy haul. And don't get me wrong. The Nationals traded Juan Soto. Right? Remember they traded him to the Padres. Look at some of the pieces they got back for Juan Soto. That was perceived to be a haul. This is if you had someone that was worth a dollar and you traded him for 25 cents. Well, what are we doing here? So that's the part that really annoys me. It's not that they traded him. It's the little value that we think we know of right now that they got back in return. So let's go around the room here. I'll start with Stu, then we'll go to Sampton, and I'll circle it back in. What's the worst trade, in your opinion, in the history of sports? Stu, go ahead.
Yeah, and you kind of alluded to it. I still think it's even 4 or 5 months later, I think it's the Luka trade. And they have such similarities because, like you said, the idea that they didn't shop him and they got not nothing mm-hmm. for him, but they got not as much as they should have. That trade is going to go down unless the Mavericks, I know they lucked out with Cooper Flagg, but if they don't win a championship and the Lakers win a championship or two at Luka, that's going to go down as the worst trade in sports history, I think.
And the Luka one is still crazier to me than this Rafael Devers thing because the player was upset with the ownership. From all accounts, Luka Doncic was not upset with the Mavericks. Luka Doncic did not want to leave. I know that they said that Rafael Devers didn't request this trade. He's not upset today. Let's be real. And it wouldn't shock me if maybe even if he didn't request the trade, there were some conversations behind the scenes that basically made him appear to ownership that this dude doesn't give a bleep. Luka was crying when he returned to Dallas because he did not want to leave. So you're 100% right on that. Samter, what's the worst trade to you?
I was deciding between two terrible NFL draft trades. It was either going to be the Herschel Walker trade that included three first-round picks and like nine total picks plus four players, but I'm actually going to go with the 99 Ricky Williams trade.
Oh, wow.
The New Orleans Saints moved up from the 12th slot to the 5th slot by trading their entire draft. First, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh round pick in that draft, plus their first and third the next round to move up seven spots for a running back. I love Ricky Williams, but that's insane.
Two that I think we're forgetting about, where it's funny to say that we're forgetting about them because they're so recent. But we've seen some horrible, and I mean some rancid trades as of late. Now, the Luka one was thought of to be rancid in the moment, right? The Deshaun Watson trade with the Cleveland Browns in the moment was thought to be a great trade by the Cleveland Browns. Now, look how that changed the Texans franchise. And then also, Russell Wilson. Look how much the Broncos gave up for Russell Wilson, for crying out loud. And Russell Wilson was a disaster. Now, here's the crazy part. The Broncos were quickly able to recover from the Russell Wilson debacle. They just made the playoffs this past year with Bo Nix. The Browns have not. The Browns right now are an unmitigated disaster. So I will throw Deshaun Watson and I'll throw Russell Wilson in there. But my two trades come with baseball. The Boston Red Sox, they got rid of Mookie Betts, and they traded David Price. Who cares on David Price? For Jeter Downs, Alex Verdugo, and Connor Wong. That was that deal. For Mookie freaking Betts. And then also, hey, the Boston Red Sox, you know, have some good trades. You have this Rafael Devers trade. You got the Mookie Betts trade. I was even reading this today, going back to when they traded Jeff Bagwell. And they traded Jeff Bagwell to the Astros for Larry Anderson. But probably the most famous bad trade of all time was Harry Frazee trading Babe Ruth to the Yankees for $100,000 to fund that play, no new net. And we all know who Babe Ruth is, obviously. Oh, my God. Some terrible, and I mean some terrible trades. It is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. We update you on some of the biggest stories in the world of sports with some audio next. We will get to a news brief when we return in 5 minutes.
The Recap Show is an inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports. Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Time for your daily news brief. We get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
Alrighty, Zach Gelb Show, Infinity Sports Network. Let's hear Shea Gilgeous-Alexander battling fatigue this late in the season.
It's tiring for sure, but every game is tiring. When you're giving your all, every possession, you're going to be tired. I don't think I'm the only one out there that's tired. But yeah, it's something new for a lot of us. A lot of us haven't been this late into this season.
Here's the bottom line. You could think he looks tired. You could think he's not maybe playing his best when he needed to step up with the series on the line when they were down 2-1 in the final 4 minutes and 38 seconds of that game going back to Friday night. He balled out. He had 15 points. I don't care how he got him. He got him. And they were the reason why they were able to tie up that series at 2 games apiece. And we'll see what they have in store tonight for a pivotal game 5. So a lot has been said. Man, Rick Carlisle has... I have not heard this yet. I intentionally did not listen to this before the start of the show. But Rick Carlisle, he's kind of turned into the lawyer for everyone in these NBA Finals. Doris Burke going to be taking off the NBA Finals call reportedly at the end of this postseason run, or maybe they're thinking about this Rick Carlisle defending Doris Burke. Scott Foster, right, the referee, he's the extender. He extends these series, right? The NBA calls him in. All right, go through this game, extend the series. And it was 2-1, and then it got to 2-2. And I know a lot of people are bitching about the officiating. I didn't walk away. I'm just giving you my honest opinion. Do you love every call that you see? No. But I didn't walk away from what was Friday night freaking out and furious about the officiating. So sometimes I think there's natters out there. and they just get a bit too crazy. But the numbers don't lie with Scott Foster. Here's Rick Carlisle, where his team lost defending Scott Foster. Is that right? All right, go ahead.
I think it's awful what some of the things I've seen about the officiating and Scott Foster in particular. I've known Scott Foster for 30 years. He's a great official. He's done a great job in these playoffs. We've had him a lot of times. The ridiculous scrutiny that's being thrown out there is terrible and unfair and unjust and stupid.
Think about that for a second. Your fans are the ones that are throwing that out there. Now, I know this happens a ton with this referee in particular. But Rick Carlisle, what world are we living in? You're in the NBA Finals. You're one of the best coaches we have in the NBA. And the two most viral things from these NBA Finals regarding him is about an announcer and an official. Ay, 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 what a weird world we live in. Let's go to Two-Tone Tyrese Haliburton, and let's see if his voice changes in this clip. How he feels heading into Game 5 tonight.
I feel great. You know, that's the best part about playoff series is, you know, when you get the chance to respond. I think that's the great thing about sports. You know, it's you're going to have good games, you're going to have bad games, but there's nothing like the game to respond. You know, so I look forward to doing that with this group and, you know, coming out and competing. And, you know, we got to be ready for a really big challenge.
And let's go to Oakmont. We'll go to Pittsburgh, where I was surprised that they were able to get in the U.S. Open yesterday. I thought for sure it was going to spill into today with all the rain. J.J. Spahn, this is on SiriusXM PGA Radio. He just needed to get this putt in two strokes. Well, all he needed was one flick of the wrist with the putter, and he hit this long putt to win his first ever major championship.
One of the hardest, if not the hardest test in major championship golf. For the win, J.J. Spahn, ball up and over the ridge. It's on a very good line. This could go in. J.J. Spahn makes it! It's the biggest moment of his career. J.J. Spahn conquers Oakmont and is your 125th U.S. Open champion.
And let's hear J.J. Spahn on that final putt.
I didn't know what I had to do. I knew two putting would be good, but I didn't look at the leaderboard walking up 18. It's probably the longest putt I've made all year. But, you know, it was nice to get a little read off Victor, and we kind of picked a good line based off of that, and it's just all about judging the speed right. And I don't know, I kind of just went blacked out, you know, once it dropped in the hole, and, you know, I'm just super happy that I didn't have to, like, make, like, a six-footer or something.
So Terrell Haddon, he was talking to the media as that was going on. He finished the tournament 3-over, and J.J. Spahn won. He was 1-under. And Terrell Haddon ended his day bogey-bogey. So at that stretch, if he didn't end bogey-bogey, and who knows what would have happened, but he wasn't going to win because of the fact that he was 3-over. But he did end bogey-bogey, and that put him 3-over. So here he is talking to the media about the disappointing end, and then he saw the J.J. Spahn putt go in, I guess, on a monitor nearby.
I sat in dining. I just hold it.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Unbelievable. What a putt to win. That's incredible.
What do you think he's feeling right now?
In shock, I would guess. Unbelievable. Fair play.
Does it feel a little better seeing him make that, you know, for your own?
No, for sure. Like, look, I'm sad about how I finished, but I'm very happy for JJ. Like, to win a major in that fashion is amazing. Like, you can't have, certainly I would hate for anyone to have any negativity towards that.
So I was actually golfing on Friday when I was off. Now that's the difference between JJ Spahn and I. He hits a putt like that on the first try. I was chipping. And my first chip, the ball went a foot. The second chip, it did not go that much further either. For some reason, I was in a rough patch, and I just couldn't chip this some of a you-know-what. On the third opportunity that I had, the ball goes very lowly up in the air, and I'm probably 40 feet from the jar. And I wasn't on the fringe, but it was a little thick. And the ball goes up in the air, and I'm looking, I'm like, this is gonna go in, and it dropped in. Now, if I would have hit it on the first try and hold out, I would have I would have birdied because I had the two shots, and it ended up saving me bogey on that hole, which I was actually fine with. But the first two shots, terrible, terrible, chunk, chunk, and then somehow I was able to hole out, which never happens for me in terms of that little boop right there in. Unbelievable. I couldn't believe we'll golf the other day. All right, let's go to Rory McIlroy. Actually, I don't want to hear any more, Rory. I already went off on Rory. We don't need to play his jackassery again. Let's go to Mike Lombardi talking about jackassery. He was on with Marty and McGee on ESPN Radio on the Bill Belichick, Jordan Hudson drama. Here is Bill Belichick's secretary and Mike Lombardi.
A lot of it is just noise. And for us to be distracted by something that has no bearing, that has no relevance whatsoever, that is a complete falsehood, it's comical. And for me to really even attack anybody who's saying it gives them credibility, which I don't, because it's a completely false narrative. I mean, look, let's face it. One report had he wasn't supposed to be here since the beginning of June. Then the next report came out that he was going to go back to the NFL. I mean, it's all just a bunch of stuff being thrown up against the wall. And the noise out there comes from a direction of people trying to be disruptive within our program. We're not going to allow it. We're not going to acknowledge it. We're going to move on.
When the CBS Sunday morning story runs and all of a sudden everyone becomes an expert, was it circling the wagons in the building?
Felt we didn't have to circle any wagons. We had no reason to circle wagons. Everybody looked at each other and was like in complete amazement. I mean, so we didn't have any reason to circle the wagons.
Even I have said this before. I think the commentary regarding this matter has gone to a stupid level. We're just so inane at this point. But Mike Lombardi, why should I believe anything you have to say? Especially when one of the reports said that you were furious with Jordan Hudson. Was that asked in this interview? I don't know. I don't like listening to Mike Lombardi. I think he's just arrogant. And I think Mike Lombardi is someone that thinks he's the greatest person ever. And let's be real, Mike Lombardi, I know you talk about your resume all the time, but Mike Lombardi in terms of his record as a GM left a lot there to be desired, if I'm just being honest. So that's Mike Lombardi. Of course, he's going to defend Bill Belichick, but he's been silent on that for quite a while. Here is Myles Garrett on the Micah Parsons contract talks.
He can deserve whatever he's earned. I mean, guy's special. Unfortunately, I got the chance to train with him. And, you know, I've seen his work ethic. I've seen how he attacks the weights, running. You know, he's 100% committed to his craft and getting better every day. And someone who produces on the field and has that level of dedication, you know, to the game, you should get every penny he's owed.
And I understand Myles Garrett saying that. And I think that they'll eventually get the deal done and it'll be $40 million, whatever it is. But all right, I understand why they go to Myles Garrett on that. My problem isn't really with Micah. It's just more so, why are the Cowboys dragging their feet in the sand again with one of these contracts? Same thing with the Dak situation. You know the deal's going to get done, but this is what the Cowboys do. It's all about drama. Let's go to Ben Roethlisberger. This is on his football and podcast on Aaron Rodgers in Pittsburgh.
I don't think he's going to go. I don't think he's got much more after this year. I think this might be it for him.
Could be.
Personally. Could be. I have no reason. You could ask, well, how do I know? I don't know. I'm just guessing in terms of you coming off an Achilles. Coming off my elbow, my first year back, I felt like I was 100. I wasn't even – you don't realize that you're not 100 till the next year when you are 100. You know what right. I'm saying? Like, I was like, wait a second. Oh, I wasn't there. And so he's coming 1 year last year off his Achilles. He's probably like, I felt pretty good. This year, he's going to be better, like in the sense of body feeling better. It doesn't mean he'll play better. Mm-hmm. You never know. That there's a lot of other factors on that. But he's going to feel better. But it doesn't mean that he's going to have 2 or 3 years left. I think this might be his last go.
I'm actually surprised how honest Big Ben is on this podcast. Now, he's been removed for quite some time, but especially when it comes to talking to about the Steelers, usually a lot of the legends of a franchise, when you talk about your franchise in particular, they're usually more positive. I'm actually impressed with the analysis there by Big Ben. Let's go to Dave Roberts on Shohei Ohtani pitching tonight.
I don't know if it's going to be one or two innings, but you know, my guess is probably an inning to start. But it's a good thing. I think that we've kind of the live situation simulated or whatever, it's sort of run its course. So he's ready to make his debut on the mound.
And Jerry Hairston Jr., before he was accosted by someone that was working out in the gym next to him and was annoyed that he was speaking on the phone with us, I thought he was making a good point too. Jerry Harrison Jr. is basically saying, well, you can't put him in a rehab start as traditional rehab starts would go because he's also so phenomenal at the plate and at the dish that you can't afford to lose his bat. So I'm okay if this is the way that they want to go about it tonight and he ends up going for an inning or two. I know you have some people that will say, oh, it's a little bit too quick and all that stuff, but if he's ready to go, he's ready to go. Let's hear Willy Adames on the Giants getting Rafael Devers.
Coming over here is going to be a big acquisition for the lineup. I mean, we needed a bat like him, and obviously to get him, he gets a clubhouse, you know, everybody's thrilled.
Everyone should be thrilled. If you're the Giants, you've been trying to, I know Adames just got there, but that organization has been trying to get big stars for a while. Bryce Harper, Aaron Judge, and they struck out on all of them. For a while, you thought Arson Judge, right, from John Heyman was going to the Giants. But now you get a guy like Rafael Devers to add to this core, and you're two games back in the NL West of winning that division. This is a tremendous move by the Giants. It's a horrible move by the Red Sox. Not to get rid of Rafael Devers. That relationship ran its course. But how little you got back in return, that to me is laughable. Now, Samter just got on my ear. There's a surprise audio cut. I think I know what this is. I'm going to assume that this is the lady in the gym. No, it's not the lady in the gym with Jerry Harrison Jr.
This is something that happened around this time, maybe an hour later than now, last week when you were not around.
When I was not around. So Gresh is filling in. Oh, I know what this is. Is this Gresh bitching about the last song that we played, Zach is Back? Is that him bitching? Because I've heard him. I did not listen. No offense. I was not listening to the show when I was off on Friday, but I've been told before that Gresh likes to bitch about the Zach is Back. All right, go ahead.
This is the Zach Gelb Show.
Oh, he should be flogged for continuing to use this. Sorry. Oh, God. Awful. That's what it should be. He's live. He's nationwide. He should get horsewhipped for using this. Smacked in the back with a steel chair. God almighty, if there's one thing that I could convince Zach to do, maybe I'm just being an old head.
Yeah, you are.
Maybe there are people out there who are like, wow, I can't wait to hear Chris Kirkpatrick say, you know what's really funny? Producers can't find the production for like my Gresh show stuff, but no one ever loses that rejoin. like seriously, that rejoin, which is just, I mean, it's like being beaten with a bag of oranges.
Oh, sorry, it's Zach is Back, all right, sung by the Backstreet Boys, and no, that's not AI. Now, I understand Gresh. He's an old fella. He's a grumpy fella. He could be a miserable fella. I like Gresh, but you remember, you're filling in on my show, Gresh. Just remember that. You're filling in on the Zach Gelb show. So if you have such a problem with what we play, you know, let's see if Bill Ryder will have you fill in. Let's see if, Pat Boyle will let you fill in, or Maggie and Perloff will let you fill in. You know, they come to me. You good with Gresh filling on your show? I say yes. Next time, you know what I'm going to say? Yeah, I'm good with Gresh filling in, but with one caveat. Every single break that we come back, you play Zach is Back, all right. You know what? Samter, Stu, I'm off a lot of Fridays. Gresh, I'm demanding. David Marinick's, I know, he's listening right now, the program director here. I want Gresh filling in for me as much as possible this summer. But the next time he fills in, Samter and Stu, if you are here and one of you don't execute this, one of you are getting fired. All right? This is how serious I am. Every break we come back from, Zach is Back, all right. You play it at 3:20, 3:40, 4 o'clock. Don't even do the top of the hour rejoin at 4. You start up normal intro at 3. 3:20 break, Zach is Back, all right. 3:40 break, Zach is Back, all right. 4 o'clock, top of the hour, Zach is Back, all right. 4:20, 4:40, 5 o'clock, 5:20. And then I will record a personal message for Gresh at 5:40. All right? Andy Gresh, enough about the bitching. And my guys, they just threw that in there at the end. Samter goes, well, I got a little surprise audio for you. Little surprise audio for you. I haven't even heard that yet. But Gresh, I understand, you are not the greatest when it comes to musical talent, all right? You're a little short in ability. That's a fine rejoin. That is a more than fine rejoin. And if you don't like it, we're going to make you suffer. We're going to make you listen to that at 3:20, 3:40, 4 o'clock, 4:20, 4:40, 5 o'clock, 5:20, 5:40. Oh, my God. Andy Gresh, the big fella, a little angry.
A little angry there by the big fella. Oh, kidding aside, I do like Andy Gresh. Very nice guy. Very, very nice guy. But you know what? His wife, actually, she likes a lot of my social media posts. I may DM his wife, and I may say to his wife, hey, why is your husband so grumpy? Why does your husband not like the Backstreet Boys? Why does your husband not like Zach is Back All Right? Oh, my God. I think Gresh is just a little jealous right there. All righty, we'll take a time out. Update time here, Zach. So Jeremy Fowler shared the other day that the Bengals, I guess this is some encouraging news, they are talking again with Trey Hendrickson. So I guess last week was such a mess because Hendrickson was not there. And then Shamar Stewart was there, blasted the team, and then left. And he's a rookie, and he doesn't have his deal done. So I don't know if that was the impetus for them getting back to the table. But anyway, they're at least talking right now, Trey Hendrickson and the Cincinnati Bengals. So I guess that's a step in the right direction. Here's what I'll say on that. You got to get a deal done. And I would say if you can't get a deal done by the end of the week, then you got to trade him. And you got to start to think about life without Trey Hendrickson, even though that could hurt you and derail your season this year. Because Burrow's great. We all know that. Joe Burrow, right, led the league in passing yards, led the league in passing touchdowns last year. Ja'Marr Chase just won the Triple Crown. T. Higgins is arguably the best number two wide receiver in the NFL. But that defense is Swiss cheese. And that defense is Swiss cheese with Trey Hendrickson, who, by the way, last 2 years, 17.5 sacks, 17.5 sacks, just led the league in sacks. So if you want to put yourself in a situation to go be great this year, you need Trey Hendrickson. And you got to hope that the improvements that you made this offseason and bringing a new defensive coordinator is going to be good enough, even though I don't think Lou Anarumo should have lost his job, if I'm just being honest. But Lou Anarumo ended up being the scapegoat. So it's one thing to talk to him again. It's one thing to reignite those contract conversations. But this can't be, you talk for a few days and there's no action. This is either you talk for a few days, you get the deal done, or that's it. All right? Call up whoever. And you go trade him and you get whatever you get back for this upcoming season, whether it's an established player or if it's future draft capital. But this can't continue to linger. Some organizations, you could allow this to continue to linger. In Cincinnati, when you have that perception of being a cheap organization, you are a cheap organization, this has lingered now for 3 years. It has. Now, it's been different contracts. Trey Hendrickson in particular has lingered for 2 years. You cannot let this linger any longer. So by the end of the week, if you don't get a deal done, or if you're not optimistic that a deal will get done, then you start picking up the phone and you trade him. But if you're talking to him again, it shows there is a desire on your part to get a deal done. Now go get the damn deal done. I would not mess around here and get rid of him. But if you can't get a deal done by the end of the week, then I think that this is going down a dead end and there's no turnaround from this point and find a way to get out of this sticky situation. So let's go around the room here. Who is a team that if at the end of the week, the Cincinnati Bengals said we tried our best, even if they want to say Trey Hendrickson's being ridiculous because you know they're going to put the blame on the player and we're going to go trade him. Who's a team that you think Trey Hendrickson would go to and you would look at that team a lot differently, or you could look at that team and you say, okay, that's the difference maker from them in order to just maybe be in a playoff team to a Super Bowl contender or repeating as Super Bowl champions or going from a team that lost in the playoffs to then getting over the hump and then winning the Super Bowl. Who is a team that could really use Trey Hendrickson? Stu?
I think this is a team that probably right now isn't really in the playoff conversation, but if they did add him, I think they would be. And that's your New England Patriots.
Oh, wow.
They have the most cap room.
Look at Stu, by the way. I was out on Friday. He missed me so much. Now
I did.
I'm back here on a Monday. That Stu is sucking up on a Monday. When I put this out there, this question before the show, if Trey Hendrickson gets traded, who's a team that you think you could really use him? I'm the Patriot fan, Stu. I didn't even contemplate the Patriots doing this. But go ahead, continue to speak. Stu could do no wrong in my book right now. I like this, Stu.
So obviously you want to maximize the Drake May rookie contract. You have $16 million in cap room. They have draft picks to trade. They already added Milton Williams to that defensive line. My guy Robert Spillane to the linebacking crew. So they've improved the defense. They've improved the offense a little around May. They might as well strike now because, like I said, you want to maximize the rookie contract of your future star quarterback. So I think they would be a great fit for him.
All righty. I'm good with it. I wasn't really considering the Patriots because I don't think they're close to contending. But if you're telling me that could be the difference of them being a 7 or 8 win team and then maybe being a 9 or 10 win team, okay, I'm all ears, but I'm still not there yet and actually believing it will happen. I was thinking that we'd go a little bit bigger here. But Samter, go ahead.
Yeah, we're going to go bigger. The New York Jets. No, I'm just joking.
No.
I was initially going to go with the Detroit Lions. Aiden Hutchinson coming off the injury, and if you pair the two of those guys together,
little 1-2 punch,
that would be great. But I'm actually going to go with the Los Angeles Chargers. We know Jim Harbaugh, he loves defense. He loves to run the ball. He loves to get after the quarterback. And I feel like that defense, Khalil Mack is back for another year, but maybe just one more year. Mm-hmm. They're getting older, right? Joey Bosa is gone now, although he's always hurt. He's in Buffalo.
He's on the Bills now. Yeah.
So I think that they need some pass rush, and I think that would be a perfect fit for them. And Trey Hendrickson seems like Jim Harbaugh's kind of guy, a lunch pail kind of guy who comes in there and just dominates week in and week out.
Now, I think a lot of people would suggest the Buffalo Bills. I think a lot of people would say the Eagles or the Chiefs. Not that they need them, but it could put a team that's already great like on steroids. I'm going to go with the Green Bay Packers here. The Packers are a fine team. Packers are a playoff team. The Packers right now, I think if everything goes right, they could win a playoff game. And you got Jordan Love. You just drafted a wide receiver in the first round for the first time since 2002. And defensively, last year you made some solid moves. You got Xavier McKinney coming over from the Giants, right? That worked out well last year. I know you just got rid of Jair Alexander, but if you bring in Trey Hendrickson, in an NFC North, though, let's be real, the Lions are the favorite. But it's not as if the Lions can't be beat in that division. I would still pick the Lions today, but the Bears, they still got to put it together. You look around the Vikings. I think McCarthy's going to be good, but we still haven't seen him start in the NFL. The Packers, you got Jordan Love. This is third full year as a starting quarterback. You made some improvements on the offense side of the ball. You go get a legit pass rusher like Trey Hendrickson, 17.5 sacks in 2023 and 17.5 sacks in 2024. You go get him. Maybe that could get you to an NFC Championship game this year. And if you get to an NFC Championship game, why not then get to the Super Bowl? So I think the Green Bay Packers could really use him. But I feel as if we usually speculate the Packers being in for a player and being in for a potential big name to land there, and they rarely do end up getting the job done, even though that's an organization that is a very good organization. And their last two quarterbacks, starting quarterbacks before, you had Jordan Love there, Super Bowl champion, and inevitably Hall of Famer, as Rodgers will one day get in the Hall of Fame, and Brett Favre is already there. All righty, Zach Gelb Show, Infinity Sports Network. Chris Persianen is going to join us in studio at 5:20 p.m. Eastern time. We'll do a little on-site, off-site next. We're coming on back in 5 minutes. And Gresh's favorite song, Zach Is Back All Right, will be playing at 5:40 p.m. Eastern time today. So big fella Gresh, if you're listening, get ready. Get ready for 5:40. Get the s'mores ready. Get the chocolate ready. Let's go.
Sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history-telling podcast chronicling the epic story of America decade by decade from the 18th century to the 20th. Original music and immersive sound design accompany us on our storytelling journey. Listen to and follow History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.